And welcome to another episode of Hold My Cutter. This is with Jack Wilson, and we are enjoying the standard Connecticut wrap, Ashton, a really good smoke, Michael McHenry and I, and with our special guest, former Pirate All-Star Jack Wilson, who in one episode told us all about getting to the big leagues, about struggles along the way, which happens with a lot of players. But what we didn't get to, Jack, in the previous episode was the great relationship you would end up having with Freddie Sanchez. I want to get to that. Before I do, I want to ask you about, it was almost like a comet, quickly extinguished, unfortunately, but the double play combination, Jack Wilson and Pokey Reese.
Yeah.
It was one of the more exciting times. And it flamed out rather quickly because Pokey got hurt. But what was that like for you when he came, the former Red? It was flashy.
Yeah.
What a great name.
Pokey was the man.
Come on.
He was such a, he got lucky too, because to start my career, I got Pat Mears and then Pokey Reese, both former shortstops.
Uh-huh.
So not only was I getting a great double play partner, but I was also getting someone to lean on more about playing the shortstop position. And Pokey from the get-go, like first time I met, I was excited because we played against each other in Cincinnati, and he was such an amazing fielder. And I was surprised we got him because we thought that at some point Barry Larkin would be gone and he would be the next coming, but he was playing second base. He came up as a stud shortstop, and when we got him, I was like so pumped. I remember the first time he came to camp, and he just came up to me, and he always called me Jackson. He'd be like, Jackson! I was like, we're going to run this. We're going to be the best middle infield combo in the entire league, and I'm like, I'm in. And we just started doing early work right away, and I'm like, this is going to be fun. Like, this is going to be fun.
It was a show.
Yeah.
It was a show. There'd be, you guys would have double play, you do the pinky thing.
Yes. Yes. Hell yeah. No, I remember that.
You guys called yourself chocolate and vanilla.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. We had a blast. Yeah. We had that one against the Cubs that day game, that to end the game. What was bases loaded?
Yeah. Yep.
I think Gonzalez hit the ball to the middle.
So.
And I had never tried that flip before in my entire life. And I was just wanting to get to the ball because I think the tying run was at third, but the winning run was at second. So my thought process was just to get to the ball. And then when I reached out and got it, I'm like, and just instinctional-wise, I went into the glove because I just didn't think I had time. But it was a tough flip because it came out hot. And luckily, it like came out, like Pokey was standing there, and it came out right to his glove because it was almost blind where I was just like, ah. And so to Pokey's credit, he had to have amazing hands because it came out really hard. Not like really kind of why I wanted it to.
Yeah.
And it came out hard and it like hit his glove and it like rattled just for a second, but his hands were so amazing that he was able to grab it and spin it right away. And that was in April. So that was that like, oh, we're here.
Oh.
This is what we're going to do the entire year. So you just had this belief. If you had a second baseman and you guys just had to believe that you could do things that nobody else could do, you knew that whenever there's a guy on first, you guys are both just thinking the same exact thing. Like, we always felt like no matter what ball was hit, we can turn a double play. And like, no matter where it was, because he knew where I was going to be, how I liked it, I knew where he was going to be, how he liked it. And there was not going to be a ground ball where we didn't believe that we could not spin it, which was, it's hard to find. It's hard to find two guys that have that same thought process.
Yeah, it really was. Like, you were on the same page.
We were the same page, and we were completely, I think the key was we were completely fearless. Mm-hmm. We were completely fearless in making plays that maybe someone else wouldn't try.
You've said that before to us, off mic, and you've said it to other people, of course.
Yeah.
Is that, and then you're in camp during spring training. This is a 2024 spring training in Bradenton here at Leacom Park, and you've worked with middle infielders in the minor leagues and the big leagues, and you said to your son Jacob, who was a first round pick for the Oakland Athletics in 2023, you were never afraid to make a mistake on the field.
I think if you're afraid and you think about it, it's that thought process is just gonna be hesitant, and you can't hesitate in this game. You have to be ready, and you have to believe completely in your ability, you know. And I just felt like any ball that I can get to, I knew I had trained myself to make every play that I could. If a ball touches my glove, I should be able to give the effort to make the play, regardless if I come to throw and it comes out a little bit too early and the guy doesn't pick it bounces off the gloves and go in the dugout. I'm still going to try to make that play. If the next ball is hit the exact same way, I'm going to do the exact same thing. So I didn't. I got upset. I hated errors, but at the same time, I always learned from them. So I felt like, all right, I know I went this way for the ball, and that was the wrong read. Hmm. So me being me, you guys are getting this now. If I made a mistake from a certain point, say I came a little two steps to my right and I picked up and threw the ball and I threw it down, didn't get picked, he's six. If you saw me the next inning, every one of my throws from that same exact area. I would literally walk over to that same thing, have the third baseman roll the ball to me, and I would replicate the same play and make the throw, and then it was gone.
It's called using your time.
Wow. Then it was beautiful. Gone. Then it was gone. So every time I made a throwing error in a certain spot, the next inning I'm throwing three or four throws from that spot to erase it.
Intentional.
To erase it.
Yep.
Man.
That was my mental.
It's so funny. So that's something I don't pay any attention to. I've just been a fan a lot of years, but I didn't pay attention to that. I don't know now or generally, guys. Just looks like just getting their arm loose. But there you have.
It's an old school approach. I mean, Bob Walk talked about like he didn't have his banger that day, the curveball. So he'd throw it 5-6 times in warmups. You just don't see that anymore. Yeah. Guys fall in love and really just tie themselves to a routine, right? Instead of, hey, what can I do to make sure that I'm ready for that next opportunity? And I love, he just shared that with me recently, and I absolutely love it. So it's such a good mentality. It's like, made the mistake. I need to do this for my psyche. Yeah. And two, it's going to just build that confidence when it comes back again. Yeah. So good.
Because if I don't, say for some odd reason they hit the ball in the same spot.
Yep.
I'm literally going to be going to that ball thinking what just happened. But since I've just made three or four throws and they were good, I'm good. Go ahead and hit the ball there. I've already fixed it. I've learned from it.
Man.
You know? And it was the same footwork, too. I would, like, feel it, and, like, whatever the shuffle was, whatever it was. And it was a way for me to literally erase what happened. And knowing that if that ball is there again, I'm fine. I'm good.
Jack, if you looked back at your career now, and this is before metrics, I certainly did believe that you were one of the best shortstops I've ever seen.
Damn.
And I don't think that you got the credit at the time you played for the Pirates then, because frankly, there were people who thought that, you know, Jack Flash, I threw that at because that's what you were. You're Jack Flash Wilson. But it was more than that. I mean, and now the metrics back that up.
You're right. Yeah.
Have you looked back at that?
What did you think back then? And what do you think about that now?
I love that we have defensive metrics because now it's not about how Gold Glove for a long time was not just your batting average.
My next question was going to be, do you know, look back, didn't you think you should have won a Gold Glove?
I can actually quantify that. I can find out.
I think if there were the metrics that they had today that were back then, I think I probably had a pretty good chance.
Right.
I got second place five times.
Yep.
I think you won one.
And all five times, I think I was higher in fielding percentage, higher in attempts, higher in double plays turn. Fortunately, we had a lot of guys on base. So that was part of it.
Sure.
But I loved when they started doing that now with these metrics. The Bible Award that came out, they started doing that, where they started using metrics to that, the Fielding Bible Award, I won that in 2009 because I really felt like, looking back, I thought 2009 was by far my best defensive year because I had Perry Hill, and he changed my footwork around just a little bit, and it was awesome. Like, everything worked. I was making all the routine plays. I was making the great plays. It was awesome.
I didn't realize that was that far into your career.
So 2009,
that was when you got traded, wasn't it?
I had it, and I was ineligible because I got traded to the other league. And I swear I had this thing. I'm like, this is the year. This is the year I'm going to get it. I've gotten fifth place, but this year I'm so much better than I had in the past. I'm sitting at like 8 or 9 errors, and I was like a 14 to 15 to 16 guy. I'm like, this is it. Everything's going well. Freddie and I are up the middle. We're killing it. This is it. Traded the American League. Didn't even think about it. Then after the end of the year, I'm like, I had a good year. I think this could still be it. And my agent had to tell me, it's like, they're not going to give it to you because they can't vote for you because you only played so many games in the National League and so many games in the American League. And I'm like,
man.
And I was crushed. I'm like,
my God.
Oh, because not only that, Perry Hill had 20, he still has 20 something. I mean, he might have to do the 30 guys underneath his wing that won a Gold Glove.
Yeah.
So that was going to be another testament to him, like, taking a guy that had never got over that hump to get that, and it was just like,
that's unbelievable.
So I have 5 silver gloves, so that's a bonus.
Yeah, yeah.
5 silver gloves.
You that's do have those.
Yeah,
speaking of Freddie Sanchez, you guys, how did you become so close and why?
Well, we played together in high school. We played travel ball in high school together, and he played short and I played second. And we played on a travel team.
You played second.
Yeah, he was phenomenal. So much so, I remember when we did the tryout for the team, I think we were both sophomores in high school. We were trying out. I remember it like it was yesterday. And all the best players in the area are trying out for this team. and they say go out to your position. So naturally, there's five shortstops. I'm in line of short. Freddie's the first one up. I'm right behind him. Freddie takes the first ground ball and absolutely lets go of this hoverball laser. Just hovers into first. I'm a short. I go, all right, I'm going to second. And I literally accepted it. I'm like, I don't have that. I don't know if he can hit. Oh, I don't know man. Who he is, but I don't have that. But I'm pretty good over here. So I literally, as soon as the ball I saw in the air, almost simultaneously just turned and walked to second base.
Good for you. That's amazing.
And I'm so like, good. I think I might be better than those three guys over there, but this dude right here is real.
That's so good.
And I literally walked over there, and we both made the team. He was the starting shortstop. I was starting second. He hit second. I hit third. And it was awesome. It was awesome.
And then years later, you're playing together.
So we make this trade, right? We make this trade with Boston. I'm in the cage, not thinking anything of it. It's trade deadline. We're used to it in Pittsburgh. We're used to the trade deadline. We got good guys. They want them. We're not competing at that time. So I'm in the cage getting ready for a game. Whoever the sideline reporter is at the time, I don't recall who it was, is talking before the game on the field about the trade, going through who and who. And there's a player to be named later. I'm still swinging, not even really paying attention. And they go, it's between this player, and Freddie Sanchez. And I like mid-swing, stop, drop the bat, run into the clubhouse, call the GM and say, get Freddie Sanchez. He is insanely good. If they're the player to be named later, we are going to get a steal. Go get him.
He's called like, the Pirates general manager.
I straight up said, listen, you need to get this guy. I promise you, he's a dude. He's stuck in Boston behind Nomar Garciaparra. He's hitting like 360 in AAA. He's hit his entire life. Go get Freddie Sanchez. I don't care whoever else is on the table. Freddie's your guy. And he's like, all right, thanks for the info. We pull the trigger, and
now this is this is what Hold My Cutter is all about. It's breaking stories.
Yep.
Get him.
It had not been for Jack Wilson, there's a chance the Pirates don't end up getting Freddie Sanchez, who of course ends up winning a batting title and is one of the most popular players, certainly in his era.
Get
That's
him.
Incredible. So what happens when you find out they do get him?
They get him. I think he was in. I'm pumped I get him. I call him. I'm like, dude, this... Because he actually played against us with Boston. He gets called up, played at PNC Park.
Wow.
Played third base for them.
Wow.
Not only did he get called up, I think he has the record for most putouts as a third baseman in American League history. He did that with Derek Lowe. Remember Derek Lowe throwing those two-seamers?
Oh, yeah.
He was playing third. I think he had 10 or 11 putouts in a game. That Boston was chanting, Freddie. I mean, this dude was a stud. You guys end up seeing what he was. And what he came to be, but like I was so ecstatic for him, and then he came up and played with us, and he played a little bit of second, a little bit of third, but he was still coming off an injury from when we traded for him. And then the next year, I'm thinking we got to give this guy an opportunity. We go out and sign Joe Randa, which is great. We always love to have these guys that come back. Joe Randa was a great big leaguer.
He had been with the Pirates previously, right? By the way,
and he came and. I always acknowledge that was the year we also had Jeremy Burnett's, and I loved having those guys because I could learn from them. I love Jeremy Burnett's was the Brew Crew. He was the guy for the Brewers, and so Joe Randa comes in, and he takes the third base job. Is what we signed him for. I think, gosh, I don't even remember who we had at second base at the time. I don't know if it was Castillo or not at the time, but second base wasn't available for him. So he becomes this bench player utility guy. And in April, all he does is pinch hit. And he sees one pitch and he gets a hit. Another pitch, he gets a hit.
Because he raked.
Give him a spot start, 2-for-4. Joe's back out there, pinch hit, base hit. And you're like, this guy's insane.
Incredible.
So the reason why the history of Freddie Sanchez happens is because Joe Randa hits a ball off his foot and breaks his foot. At the end of April.
Whoa,
Freddie Sanchez becomes the starting third baseman at the end of April. This dude goes to the All-Star game, wins a batting title, has 200 hits, and didn't play in April.
That's so incredible.
So
that's
in unreal. A six-month season, this dude did 200 hits in 5 months. And to this day, I tell people the most impressive thing I ever saw about Freddie Sanchez was also a very gifted defender. He doesn't get a lot of that because you saw his body. You would say he didn't have any range, but he was very good at second base, turned the ball great at second base. He had very good range, but you just looked at him. You didn't think he could, but he did, and he was really smart. But that dude never gave up an at-bat. If he was 3-for-3, he wanted 4-for-4. you know, we get that human nature where we're two, you're going to your last at bat, you're 3-for-4, and you're like, worst case scenario, 3-for-5.
Yeah, yeah.
Freddie's like, no.
Yeah.
It is 4-for-5, and that's it. Like, that was his thought process, and that's what made him such a great hitter. There was never a bat that he didn't have his unbelievable focus that I am going to get a hit. And I'm like, and that's what made him such a great hitter. Like, he obviously had amazing hands, very good knowing of the strike zone, could put it wherever you wanted, control the barrel, amazing barrel control, had a little bit of pop, and just a doubles machine. But, man, he could hit.
And heart, the size of this ballpark.
Yes,
he could drive. And, I mean,
he loved baseball. Whew. Man, played 4 years of college, wasn't a draft guy after his junior year. We played against each other in junior colleges for 2 years. I was at Oxnard. He was at another junior college. We played against each other. So, yeah.
And it was Jose Castillo. Great memory. Okay. Yeah, who tragically passed away in 2018.
Was Brownie, sad. Before we go any further, to put it full circle, and I just shared this with Jack last year, was Freddie was the guy I looked to when it came to hitting. Him and Manny Ramirez. They were both little older guys, right-handed.
You were in the organization.
No, this is way before I was in the organization. Way before.
Well, how'd this happen?
I was watching baseball. I watched him swing. I watched him play.
Oh, you
knew nothing about the Pirates.
Oh, wow.
Then we went to San Fran. I followed him there.
Wow.
And he was the guy that I always looked to because I loved his rhythm. I loved how he kind of put everything together. It always looked like he had a dance going on in the box with the pitcher. And I really believe that was a missing link for me. So I watched him religiously. I have every single of his bat on my iPad, him and Manny Ramirez. Every single one. It's a lot of bats. I actually blew up my iPad when I downloaded all this stuff. But, like, yeah, like, it's so cool to know that he's not just great in my mind as a player, the way he played hard and everything else. But I didn't know anything about the Pirates, but I knew about those two. It's just he was a guy I looked at and was like, wow, the doubles, the line drives. It was everything I wanted to be as a hitter.
Yeah, he could put the ball wherever he wanted. He was a barrel.
So crazy.
What was it like to be on the field as a teammate with a batting race on the line?
It was
so much fun for the fans.
There's another question. Like, what's your favorite memory of like, your baseball career? And, like, it's a tie between going to the All-Star game and watching Freddie Sanchez win a batting title.
That's so cool.
Just because we were going in our last series, and it's him and Miguel Cabrera back and forth. We go out to dinner. We come home from a road trip, and I think it was relatively close because we still had the night. And we went out. We went into the city, and we got some like hibachi grill, Japanese place. We're sitting down, and the wheels are starting to spin about this whole batting title thing. It's starting to become real, and it's close, two or three points.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
And he's got him so far, and he's just like, dude, he's starting to get to me. I'm like, dude, no, Freddie, no. You just go out and focus on being you. That's it. So. This is awesome. Last game of the season, right? Miguel Cabrera needs like 3 hits. If Freddie gets one, he's sealed. He can't, even if like Cabrera goes 5-for-5, he can't touch him. So Miguel starts his game. He goes 0-for-1, and I think he ends up with 2 at-bats, and he pulls himself out because they're not going to the playoffs. We didn't know that because we were playing at the same time. So I'm hitting like 8th. I think he was hitting first to try to give him the most at-bats in case he needed it, if I remember right.
Yeah.
I just remember he was 1 hit away. And I remember being on first base, being like, and I was on first. I'm like, if this dude hits a ground ball, I am running into it.
Great.
I am just running into this thing.
Yes.
Because he needs one. He just needs a hit.
That is so good.
And I'm like, dude, if this dude hits a chopper, I'm putting my head down and just boom. I'm just going to run into this thing.
Great. Call.
Sure enough, I think he ends up getting a hit later in the game, shoots to right field, and then it's official. Miguel comes out of the game, he gets it, I think they stopped the game had a ceremony after the game, I believe. They gave him the watch.
They had placards.
Yeah, they had a plaque and a watch.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And he took all his pictures with the bat, like the batting champs, and I think that was so special to see, because remember, he was born with a club foot.
Right.
So he wasn't even supposed to be an athlete.
I mean, the story just gets better, but wow.
He had those, like, Forrest Gump braces on his feet and stuff, and he's a tremendous competitor. He was a very good basketball player, too. This guy wasn't even supposed to be an athlete. He wasn't supposed to play youth sports. Mm. And he ends up winning this batting title, coming from a guy that was traded. You're a bench guy. No, you're an all-star game. Now you're a 200-hit guy, and you're a batting champion. You're just like, that's not like the storybook baseball right there. And so I always feel like that always has a special place in my heart. Things like the Rob Mikoviak doubleheader. when his kid was born. Like, those to me were kind of overlapped anything that I personally had, because it was so unbelievable to watch at the time. Like, we kind of transcend. You're just like, is this really happening? You just have a kid hit a game-winning homer and the game-tying homer all in the ninth inning the same day that you gave birth to it, that your wife gave birth to it.
You can't ever
your
forget
kids,
any
you're
of
just
that.
Like, is this?
Well, players usually don't go to the this? Game. They keep winning.
It's seared into your brain.
Yeah.
Forever,
they
yeah.
take off a day or two.
And sure enough, I think later on, we had my second, my daughter, Jaden. We had a scheduled doubleheader. We induced. We had Jaden, and because Rob did what he did, they made me play a doubleheader that night because they thought I was going to do something.
Oh,
meanwhile,
no.
I go 0-7. I run the wrong bunt play.
Get out.
But they say nothing to me because I'm like, you guys realize what I just watched this morning? What
oh,
I just unfolded?
My gosh.
And I'm like, I don't know how Rob did
they
it.
What the Makoviak effect to rub off
like,
on you?
Like,
it's got
to
work again.
If we can get something out of Jack today, let's go.
Man.
I'm like, you screwed me. I'm 0-7 now because you hit two homers.
I ran the wrong butt play.
I ran the wheel, and I called it. I called the wheel and stayed it short.
No kidding.
No, your brain is everywhere
Freddie,
at this moment.
Freddie gets the ball in third and turns to throw to third and goes, huh?
Oh, no.
And those are first. And he looks at me and he's like, what are you doing? You called the play. He's like, you called it. Why are you not here? I'm like, I just pointed at my bracelet. I'm like, hey, what do you expect?
I'll point the bracelet.
Yeah. I'm like, I had a kid today.
We have a kid today. This is game two.
I'm a girl dad now.
Oh, my.
I'm dealing with
a
lot of things.
That's a different animal, too. Yeah, wow.
Absolutely incredible, man.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That is so great. Now, but I remember, Jack, the difficulty. Yeah. I remember vividly two trades since I've been doing this that stand out. And I do the Freddie Jack kind of combination. Oh, it was the same day or not. The other one
same
was,
day.
Was same the same day.
Day.
The other
you
one
guys
was
got
when,
traded on the same day.
Same morning.
When Niger Morgan was traded from the Pirates to the Nationals, I walked into that clubhouse. It was like somebody had put a big black drape over there. It was unbelievable.
We loved Niger.
It was just so quiet. It was like a morgue in there.
Yeah.
But now we're on the road, I think, when you were traded,
in San Francisco.
Okay. So
on a wife's trip.
Oh, geez.
Oh no.
On a wife's trip.
So your wife got traded too in the same moment.
So I had to get to Seattle, but Pittsburgh took her home. They let her come on the flight back to Pittsburgh.
That's cool.
It was awesome.
That's cool.
And you have to understand, this was 2009. This was the first time we had ever had a wife's trip.
Wow.
It never happened. So everybody was really excited because all the wives were on the plane with us. Sure enough, I get traded the morning of a Sunday game. Freddie gets traded afterwards, and I'm like, what do I do? I have to go to. They wanted me to play that night in Seattle, so I got to get on a flight. The GM's like, hey, we'd love to have you. Can you make it? We're facing Toronto. And I'm like, I mean, when's the flight? They're like, in an hour and 15 minutes. So I'm like, okay. And then I look up, like, we're facing Roy Halladay. I'm like, you're not going to make that flight.
By the way, no,
there's no way you're trading for me to play at home against Roy Halladay.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh,
there's
no.
There's a lot of losses there.
I can't find my glove. I'm like, bro, you can't ask me. I am going.
Oh,
my wife is here. I have other things.
Yeah.
So I end up getting a later flight. And I end up showing up to Seattle in, like, the fifth or sixth inning. But it was so awesome that Pittsburgh, the Pirates were amazing with her and was able to take her back. And she was really emotional because we really wanted to stay in Pittsburgh. We loved it there. And, you know, it just ended up not working out. And it was tough. It was tough for her. And all the other boys were there, like, consoling her and helping her throughout the whole flight. That's a long flight of San Francisco back to Pittsburgh.
Unreal.
So,
wow.
Yeah, it was a tough day for my kids.
Well, now you and Freddie talked about it leading up to the trade.
We did. Well, unfortunately enough, like, it was kind of like a package deal. And it was, I don't know if the word regret is what I would use. I had told, they had approached me about a 2-year deal. And at the time, like, I'd been so blessed with contracts and financial stuff that it wasn't even about anything like what I was making. I just said, listen, I see it coming. I see the talent. Because I had rehabbed a couple times down in Indianapolis. I saw what McCutchen was. I saw what Neil was. We had just spent a bunch of money on Pedro. And we were really getting excited because we were starting to spend money in the draft for the first time. And I'm like, it's coming, but it's 2 to 3 years away. I really believe that. And for me to stay here and be sane, like, you guys need to talk to Freddie. Like, we need to get Freddie in on this too. You need to keep us together. And it was not something they wanted to hear. Like, I don't think they were interested at that point. They were really not happy with the way I said that. But I said, I watched what happened to Jason Kendall when Giles left, when Williams left, when KY left. I saw that firsthand. I was going by experience. And I love the young guys. When I got went down there in spring training, I love being around them. But I'm like, I'm going to look around here, and I'm gonna, it's going to be me. And not a lot of guys have left. And it's hard.
It's a lot of weight.
So it was going back and forth, and they started dealing with Freddie. I was really happy about that. But the numbers didn't line up for him, and it was going to be his first contract. So I did not say anything. I said, listen, we're good. The years and the number is good for me. Let's just get Freddie. And I'm on Freddie like, hey, dude. We got to stay together, bro. Like, and he's like, I know. And it's like, but my agent is saying this. And I'm like, I understand that part too. You got to do what's right for you too. So, and I just kind of let it be. And then we're Saturday night in San Francisco. We're out to dinner with a couple of the couples because it's the wife's trip. And I'm like, I looked at my wife. I'm like, you know what? I don't want to leave. I don't want to go. Trade deadline's coming up. I'm like, I think we're just going to end this right now without Freddie. I think it's just going to wait to be. I'm just going to. So I call my agent. I say, call them. Tell them we're good to go. I'm in. They called back. And they're like, I'm really sorry. The trade's already gone through.
Wow.
So they said they had made the trade with Seattle. It was already done. And it had already been sent to the office. And I was like, so I was maybe an hour or two too late from continuing to be a Pirate. And I like. So when he called me that morning in the cab and said it ended up going through and it's all done, we appreciate everything you did and stuff like that, I was just like, man, that's on me. I'm more emotional about that when I did the interview talking about how I was going to miss it and everything. It was just like, I was like, why did I wait so long? I was just hoping that Freddie could do it with me, but then at the end, and I was just like, I kicked myself even to this day because just being – not so much that it didn't work out in Seattle and didn't work out very well, but I didn't play very well, and that's not really the reason for it. I was just like, what would have been a chance to be a part of what happened those two or three years later and to be a chance to play with one organization for your entire career. And that is just like a day too late. Mm. A day too late that didn't just pop in my head and tough.
Well, what a great story that is.
Tough.
A great lesson for many who But when given the chance to stay, and you're a little different situation, but I think
you're fighting for a teammate, right? Like, I love that.
Fighting for the teammate, and oftentimes it seems like this isn't the case with you, but I think it seems like players oftentimes want to go somewhere they believe that it's greener pastures.
Yeah.
And
it's always greener, right?
Yeah.
But I felt like with us up the middle.
I mean, yeah.
And if you bring it, and McCutchen just got called up. So I played with Kutch in the big leagues for maybe a month, maybe a month and a half. So he just got called up. So I saw this guy. I'm like, man, if you keep Freddie and I together, we might be able to do it sooner.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm like, the talent's coming, but, you know, and they weren't too far off. But, at the end of the day, do I look at it and like, gosh, dang, I could have done it differently. But then at the same token, Freddie has two World Series rings.
Yeah. Yeah.
Touche.
Yeah.
You know, and you can never say never. Yeah. You can't regret it. And I'll tell you what, I bet you the Pirates regret it. No disrespect. But that was a trade that did not work out because I think you went with Ian Snell.
Yes.
To Seattle.
Yeah.
And again, no disrespect to the guys they got, but it just didn't work out. Ronnie Sedango, Jeff Clement, Nate Adcock, Aaron Probanek, and Brett Lauren. I mean,
at least we brought a haul in. At least we
got a haul.
He did, yeah.
I mean, you did get a haul.
You brought in a truckload.
July 29th,
that's for sure.
2009.
Yeah.
And
I played with two of those guys.
You did?
Yeah.
And then, did you and Freddie stay in touch?
Also, yeah, we're pretty close over in Arizona, so we golf a lot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's a big golfer now. He's really into it, so it's fun to get on the course with him and catch up. And his son, he's got one son that's graduating high school and going off to college. Here pretty soon, and then his other son is playing ball, and Freddie runs his own travel organization called the FS 21 Stars, and they do an amazing job. I wear him out for naming it after himself.
I think, as you should.
And I'm like, bro, the FS 21 Stars, really? And it's the logo of him making the All-Star catch.
Oh, that's
like,
great.
Hey, you got a sick logo, too.
Yeah, but I'm not putting it on my travel team.
That's true. That's
uniform.
No, I wasn't even saying like,
I love it. Yeah,
it's so cool. Like, when you have something that neat, you can remember it. But yeah, naming it after him.
Well, the way travel ball is now, like, it's so refreshing to see people that do it right for the right reasons that have the kids in mind. And there are some out there that aren't like that, you know, going through that with Jacob and going through the travel scene, and in baseball now than youth baseball is pretty tough, whether it's a money grab or they really don't care about the kids. Yeah. Or they're just, so he's doing it right over there in Arizona. They're doing really well.
Did you, I know you're into your career, of course, when you're Seattle, but do you start watching the Pirates then?
All the time. I think they wear me out because I always put the Pirate game on in the clubhouse.
So 2012, the team was looked like headed to the playoffs and then collapsed in September, then finally break through in 13. You were kind of watching that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was glued. I was trying to get to fly out there and go to the game. I was really wanting to do that and be a part of it, you know, to be there. And because that's something I always dreamed of, like being on the field when this thing turned around after the
12 it started to turn around. 13 was the playoffs.
20 years.
After 20 years
of playoffs. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, going through 9 of those.
Yeah.
And just be like, this place, because I think that was when, like, people understood, like, how amazing a sports city Pittsburgh was. And it was always 2 of 3. Steelers, Penguins, Pirates. Steelers, Penguins, Pirates. Then it was Steelers, Penguins, Pirates.
Yeah.
Now we're the Kings.
Yeah.
We are the Kings. Yep. And I loved watching the crowd and just the enthusiasm and about both. Was it 3 years in a row between the wild card games and stuff? It was so fun to watch.
Jack, how about you? What's amazing too is that not only do you make the club in 2001 after bypassing AAA as a big leaguer, 2001 for the first time, they christened PNC Park.
Crazy. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember what it was like coming up from Florida and the bus goes into PNC Park, the new ballpark?
No, even coming out of the tunnel.
Well, no, but I'm saying we walked out.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yes, we did.
And I watched you guys. I wanted to see because I was amazed by it. Yeah. I just watched your reactions. And everybody, the lights are on and you're looking at this ballpark for the first time. What was that like?
I don't think I'd ever at that point stepped foot on a major league field. So that was my first time doing that.
Come on.
No.
You stepped into heaven's doors first
one?
Yes,
yes.
Dude, kidding? First one. Wow.
And I'm like, oh, man. And first of all, too, you got to think, from the time they say you made the team to that point, your heartbeat is at an insane rate, let alone stepping on the field for the first time. I just remember seeing it for the first time because we came in at night, remember?
And seeing
it out of the tunnel.
Oh, yeah,
with those special blue-colored lights.
Yes, yes.
And then the lights, and then we were all just so excited. And really, I was just focused on watching all of the guys that played at Three Rivers see it because then they're going from it's almost like old McKechnie to Lecom.
Right,
like
right.
How I look at it, like what it was and what it is, and just the excitement of it until they saw the north side notch and every right hand here. Like, gosh, dang
it. I know. I hate that.
Oh, my gosh.
Stupid. That's a great call.
They don't pay people for triples.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what it's for. It's like, we can hit triples.
The homers go to die.
Yes. I just remember, like, are they all like this? There was only a couple stadiums that you walked into and you were like, so to this day, walking to PNC Park is special. Special, special, because that was my first home.
Yeah.
You know, and it was there for so long. And then it was always like Fenway, Chicago, but, you know, old Yankee Stadium that we got to play in before the new Yankee Stadium. But what was really special for me was Atlanta. Because Atlanta, you grew up watching TBS.
Yep.
So remember, it was only them. And, like, so it was only Atlanta, and it was WGN Chicago, the only nationally televised game. So when I stepped into the old Turner Field, I think it was Turner Field.
Yeah.
And I'm like, facing Greg Maddux, I was like,
I
love PNC Park. It's new.
Yeah.
But I feel like now I'm here.
Yeah.
Like, you're standing here. I'm like, I feel like I'm playing video games against like the. And, you're, and the first day there, more, first day in Atlanta, I'm facing Greg Maddux.
Come on.
I'm like, he was the first guy I saw. I saw. I'm like, so Kevin Young comes up to me in the dugout, in the clubhouse in Atlanta. I'm still trying to figure it out. He's like, hey, have you ever, this is after, I think it was after I came back.
Okay, your second thought, yeah.
So he's like, have you ever faced Greg Maddux? I'm like, no, I've never faced Greg Maddux. What do you think?
Being polite.
No. And I'm already like mind up about it. I'm like, I'm on a geeky mode. I'm a fan of the guy and I got to face him. And he goes, here's the secret about facing Greg Maddux. I'm like, there's a secret?
Yeah, there's a secret.
He's like, all right, if it comes out and it looks like it's a strike, don't swing. It's a ball. But if it comes out as a ball, swing. Because it's a strike. Sure enough.
Come on.
First pitch, cutter in, ball. Strike one. What? Oh, He's right. Next pitch comes out of his hand. Strike, right? Don't swing. Change up. Ball. Let's go. Literally, you had to do the exact opposite of what you wanted to do. If it looked like a strike,
you
couldn't swing.
Are you kidding me?
Because that's what made him so amazing, right? He would make a strike look like a strike, but it would come out of the zone, and then he would throw a ball out of the zone that would come in and be a strike. And I'm like, oh, thank you.
That advice.
Sure enough, line drive base hit to left, ran at first. So I was just like, first time I faced him. I ended up hitting like 370 something against him.
Wow.
Because Kevin Young's advice.
Yeah. Great approach.
He's the only guy I ever had the approach and be like, hey, if it comes out of a strike, just don't swing. And from that, I took that. I think I have 50 plus at bats off him. That wow. I just the same approach wow. every time.
That's amazing.
And if you wanted to butt on him, you had to be careful because he was really good off the mound. Like, really good.
Yeah, Gold Glover.
Yeah. Long so time I was like, glover. There was a couple times that I wanted to butt on him, but you did it more in Wrigley because their grass was so thick. So one time I got him, and I was like, whew, I got Greg off the mound. I was like, I got lucky.
You could, like, you had the first 2 years, I think you might have led the league in sacrifice bunts.
Yeah, they didn't want me to swing. They were like, just please help us.
Yeah. Get the ball down.
I'm like, there's a one out with a man on first.
Just help
and,
us.
Hey, nothing worse. This was the worst, and I didn't even think twice. I'm scuffling that first month we talked about in episode one.
Yeah.
I'm scuffling. We're in Houston. We have a long inning. We score a couple. Ends up, I'm hitting eighth. I get up in the first inning, bases loaded, two outs, and got pinch hit four.
No.
So I didn't even get to go play defense, and I started the game. He's like, all I feel like is like, oh, base loaded, yeah, two outs, I take one step, Jack. Oh, you want to talk to me?
Before, yeah.
And all of a sudden, Nooney comes walking. Abraham Nunez comes walking.
Are
up.
You
and I'm like,
kidding me?
Oh, my day's done. All right, I go get my terse on and just go sit by the Gatorade cooler.
You gotta be.
And I'm like, man, I didn't even get. I started today and I didn't get a plate appearance. So do I get the start? Because I didn't step on. I officially did not step on the field.
Wow.
I was just in the lineup. I'm
that's
like, man.
An unbelievable story. Yeah. Is that Lloyd?
That's Lloyd.
I'm going to get on Lloyd for that
That's
one.
That's okay.
I'm just kidding.
I might have done it too.
Yeah. How about now? So that's opening 2001. Your year 2001 is incredible when you think about it. You go back down to the minor leagues. Then you go, you know, play some triple A ball. Then you stick. But then September 11th hits.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You were supposed to play the Mets that
we
night.
Were.
Right?
They were in town. It was also the very first doctor's appointment for Jacob.
Holy
wow. That
God.
Morning. So I watched it happen in the waiting room on the TV. And obviously, you know, the plane that went down really close to us
in Shanksville. Yeah.
So people were calling us to, like, because they didn't
what's
know
going
where
on?
We were
yeah,
and everything.
Yeah.
But that was all just an emotional, because I'm looking at, like, I'm there to go see the first images of our first kid. And then that's happening on the screen. And then you're like,
gee,
then you want to check in with your Mets guys to make sure, like, they know that, like, are you guys okay and stuff like that. But I mean, I'm 23 years old. I can't even fathom the situation. You know, you can't even register it and understanding what's happening, you know, and the volume and the intensity of it. You're just like, you're watching it over and over. Like, how is this even possible? Like everybody else in the country just sitting there in just complete utter shock. And then I don't think we played for three
or
four
days. But then do you remember getting on the bus go to Chicago?
Yeah, we drove all the way to Chicago.
And then we stopped at a rest area, mm-hmm. like, 3 hours away, and we waited for it seemed like 2 hours.
Yeah, because they didn't know if we were going to play or not.
And then took a U-turn
and came
back to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, came back because they said we're still not playing yet.
They bagged that weekend and then came back and played the Mets
in New York.
They flip flopped the series.
Come on.
Dude, well, we're in New York, right? I think they had already opened, they had already played, I think they had already played a series before we got there, New York Yankees did.
No, when baseball resumed,
we were
supposed to go to New York on the schedule,
right?
But we couldn't because Shea Stadium was being used as for supplies and
so
on.
Okay,
so they made the Mets come back to Pittsburgh,
mm-hmm.
and then we went back to New York later toward the end of the season. Do you remember the game when baseball resumed?
Was it at, were we on the road? We were at home.
PNC Park.
Against the Mets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't fathom how you guys went on the field because we're up there in the booth going, this is so hard.
I
don't know how you played.
I think we understood that it was going to be part of the healing process. It was a chance for you for a couple hours to not think
about
what's happening.
Yeah, yeah.
While also honoring the people, the firemen, the people that passed away. You know, we were wearing the different hats,
right.
And like a lot of us were like painting our shoes red, white, and blue and stuff like that. I changed my song to Born in the USA by Bruce Springsteen.
Wow.
Just because you were, I think that's what it was, though, was a chance to start the healing process for these fans to get something else to focus on for a little bit, and you know, kind of take them away from what's happened. And I remember going to the Mets.
That's
at Shea. And we're sitting there, and they're running the video of kind of some of the images and stuff. The heroes.
Yeah.
And you're just in the moment, and you're with New York people, and you're just like want to love on them and be there. And you remember Shea was so close to that airport, and during the national anthem, one of those planes flew over, and I couldn't stop shaking. It was the scariest thing I've ever, because you're literally in the moment and you're flashing at what happened. And next thing you can't hear that plane coming. You're in that stadium. And all of a sudden, boom, and everybody just went like this. We were on the line. Just
unbelievable.
Like, it was the freakiest thing I'd ever been a part of on a field, where I was just like, and it shook me. It shook me, because I'm like, that, then you put it together, that plane was that big. That thing just went over us. Now you can imagine what, like hitting that building. You're just like, oh my gosh, like that, because it was right next to the airport, and you could not, because the walls were so high of the stadium, you couldn't hear it coming. Like, you can hear a plane coming by us now, we would hear it. You could not hear it, and it would just whoom, right over the top of us. And I was like, oh boy. Yeah, that was.
Did you get to that during that series? Did you walk down?
We went down there. Yeah, we walked down there.
I remember seeing the soot still and the smell. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was. That was tough. I mean, I remember we were flying in and all the lights were on because they were still searching and then, like, you know, ground zero and everything and just. That was
tough.
But
it was so bizarre that Shea was being used again. It was as a staging area. The schedule, the original schedule, had the Pirates playing later at Shea, but because of the situation, it flip-flopped. And anyway, so we were playing the Mets, and that 2001, you think about that year you had and all that you went through. And when was Jacob born?
So Jacob was born the following March. So I missed opening day 2002. So March 30th, 2002, we're at the end of spring training, and Julie hung back because she's ready to pop, and I get a call, and I got to fly across country trying to get to her because she goes into labor. And the good thing is, the first kid usually lasts the longest, so I make it back to California in time for delivery and see Jake. And probably one of, like, coolest moments, like, ever happened to me on a baseball field. I miss opening day. I come back. I end up not starting game two, but I go into pinch hit. And I step in the box, and this giant figure stands up behind home plate, and it's Mike Piazza. And he goes, "Hey, man, congratulations on Jacob." And I'm like,
"Jump off it."
I'm like, "What just happened?" Like, Mike Piazza just knows my kid's name. Like, he had read the notes,
and that's incredible.
And I stood in there, and I'm like,
"Awesome."
And how am I supposed to hit now?
Jeez.
How am I supposed to hit right now?
Oh, yeah. God.
On the
and
flip side,
pinch hit
even
too.
Worse, on the flip side, let's go back 9 months prior. This is Julie's fault. I'm in Arizona. Guess who I'm facing that night? Just think of the worst person you could possibly face in Major
League
Baseball. Randy freaking Johnson.
Yeah.
She calls me and tells me we're pregnant. I said, "Honey,
I'm about
facing
to face
Randy Johnson.
Yeah. Couldn't just wait.
You told me after the game. I was like, I already got enough stuff going, so I'm super excited. I'm going to be a dad. I'm going to face Randy. I'm going to be a dad. But I have to face Randy.
And Randy's coming for your soul.
And then I'm like, I'm going to be a dad. I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, he's coming for your soul.
Whoop-boom! I just said, I'll be dead. Oh, my gosh.
Kill you.
So just you had these two spectrums where I'm like,
man,
I'm going to be a dad. And then you have this moment where you're facing this Hall of Fame most feared
he's
pitcher.
He's a Grim Reaper of baseball.
You got Nolan Ryan, you got Goose Gossage, and you got this dude. Are the scariest people on the planet to face. And then on the flip side, you got this giant Italian Hall of Fame catcher.
Yeah.
Like, standing up out of his thing to just say, like, "Hey, man,
over you.
Congratulations on Jacob." And I'm like, oh.
But I still blame Julie.
I wasn't going to get a hit anyways, but there's one person I can blame for going over, and that was the day to do it.
That is unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah.
So wow. No hits off the big unit.
No, I hit a home run off him. That day.
You got back.
I got back at him. It was 04. Everything worked in 04.
Were you hit a home run off Randy Johnson?
I did. Wow. I did. It's actually, you know what, the funny thing is with coaching, that I really dove into coaching, and most of the time, 90% of the time, I never say anything about what I did. They know I can teach them stuff, but me telling you, oh, I hit 300 in 2004 does nothing for you as a player. But there are things that happened maybe in that year that I can tell you about that maybe led to success that you can learn from. So this is actually one of the stories, other than just like digging myself because I have a homer off of Randy Johnson. It's more the fact, okay, I faced Randy first inning. He goes, it's 2004, so I'm hitting second now, so this is cool. Okay. I get to a 1-1 count, first to bat, and he throws me a fastball, and I hit a line drive right back by his face. Smoke it. Like, it's going to hit him. It goes right by him for a single. Second to bat comes up, 1-1 count. I'm thinking, okay, so Randy's got the two-seamer, and he's got the wipeout slider that we all see the strikeout, but he has a get-me-over slider that he can throw for a strike. That's not as sharp. So 1-1 count, all right, I almost killed this dude. There's no way he's throwing me another heater. So I'm going to sit that get-over slider because he's not throwing out of the zone. He's going to come at me. Because I got Jason Bay behind me. He's going to mess around with Jason Bay. So he throws the get-me-over slider, and I go,
clack, clack.
I go second row, north side notch.
Come
Stop
on.
Stop it.
So I hit it, and I'm like, yes. Oh, no.
North side notch.
And I'm like, whack. Oh, no. No. And it goes. It goes. So as soon as I turn third and you hear the crowd and you realize it got over the notch, now I'm floating because I just hit a home run on Randy Johnson.
He's
but,
in the
I tell, but I tell that story because I tell people how to understand when to look for pitches, how to look for pitches. I always say use your past to help your present. Man. And I'm like, that's a situation where I use my past on what happened the at-bat before to give me an advantage. Hey, I don't think he's going to throw this. Because if I think fastball, I might probably roll it over that short to the shortstop. But I teach that instead. So that story comes up only because I believe that there was something to learn and teaching hitters on understanding that your past and something happened can be used to help you in the present if you really think about it and break it down.
Awesome. You must love coaching.
I do.
He loves coaching.
He's so good at it. I mean,
he makes me love coaching.
I love
just the lessons, man.
I think, but it's, I love coaching because I believe that the coaches that I had that made an impact on my life, that's what I want. It's not about, it's baseball, but it's about life, and it's about explaining and talking about every mistake that I made over the course of my career on and off the field that they can learn from to not make the same mistake. But really love diving into just these kids' lives and trying my best to. So I tell people, it's super old school. I was like, you have to call me Coach Jack. Nobody in college calls anybody coach anymore. So maybe in high school because they're still learning how to. But even this day and age,
I got to witness this firsthand too.
This generation's a little different now with how they talk to older people. And I said, whether it's Mr. and Mrs., I'm still Mr. and Mrs.
That's great.
You know, I'm 46. My parents taught me Mr. and Mrs. So I'm still yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Respect.
Mr. and Mrs. until they tell me they can call me something else. So every time I meet a kid, we did this in USA, I say, I need you to call me Coach Jack. And this is why. It's old school. And it's not because I don't want to have a friendly relationship with you. But every time you call me coach, it reminds me of my job. It reminds me that I have a responsibility to you to be your coach and your mentor. So much so that if I see you 10 years from now and you say, what's up, Jack? I didn't have that impact. Because you are not seeing me as that person that I was trying to be for you. But if you come up, Coach Jack, what's up? Like seeing tomorrow the other day. Coach Jack, what's going on? Like,
that's humbling, right? Feels good.
It makes it so, okay, I knew I did my job. And to make sure that I treat everybody the same. And it's about investment into young people's lives. So that's what I love about it the most. And that's why I really love college baseball. Because you have these 3 to 4 really crucial years of manhood from age 18 to 23 that you can make a huge personal impact. But it's, you know, it's two ways. It's both ways too. It's both ways too. And some players don't, whether they don't want that or not, but I just love everything about it. You know, I'm just teaching.
you know. It's crazy because I still call my high school coach. And I don't call him Tommy. I call him Coach. My college coach who just passed away, God rest his soul, and assistant coach, all those guys. That's all I knew. And I, when he did that, he made that same speech at USA, I was like, this is the way it is. This is the way it should be. This is amazing. Yeah.
So you got to love him.
He sets a really high expectation standards, but he meets it. It probably goes up beyond it, so the kids just follow that lead.
I've watched a lot of players as a fan and as a broadcaster, and it is just an absolute treat to both of you guys and to have Jack Wilson. Just one of my all-time favorites, and I speak for a lot of Pirate fans. This has just been an absolute treat, and I hope that you'll join us at Bern. One of these this summer by Rocky Patel. You'll be in Pittsburgh.
I'm
going to
try. Yeah. So I'm managing in the Appalachian League this summer for a couple months, a collegiate wood bat league. And we have a interesting schedule. We have every Monday off. So I've been talking to Joe Villadue with the Pirates.
Oh, nice.
Like, hey, I can fly out on a Sunday.
That'd be great.
Come to a Pirates game on a Monday and then fly back for the team and be for the game on Tuesday. So I'm hoping to. I miss being out there. It's a wonderful place. But Brownie, you're the best.
You're
saying a lot of nice things, but telling you what,
he is. He's the best.
Well, the bottom line is Mikey too is the same thing. You, anytime you guys want, it's so easy because you guys are so amazing at what you did. You're so professional, and our relationship throughout the years was amazing. It's like I'll never tell Brownie no, because you're so good at what you do. I love listening to when you're on the broadcast. I love listening when you're on the TV. It's amazing. I'm definitely sneaking up there tomorrow night in the game because I want to talk to you guys and see Matt Capper too. So you guys do a phenomenal job. So I love it.
He's the absolute best. Jack best. Flash Wilson, man.
Hey,
yeah, good luck. Can't wait to see Jacob in the big leagues too. Jack Wilson.
Good.
Yeah.
Make sure you like and subscribe. Hold my cutter. Right for it.
That's correct. Let's go.